Welcome to East Meets West, episode 311. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
Roger, are you not watching Doctor Who?
I am very, very behind.
Wow.
The last one I watched was the Haunted House one.
Okay, all right. So you're in this season.
Yes, but I'm like three episodes behind.
Wow. All right. Fine. We'll talk about Benghazi then.
I'm sorry. I found that Haunted House of Doctor Who to be incredibly disappointing.
I didn't find it incredibly disappointing, but it was definitely a throwaway episode.
I found it incredibly because it had such a great start. It had such a great set.
Oh, yeah, you didn't like that. But it's all about love and love and love and love.
No, no, I'm sorry.
But it's love, Roger, and also love.
No, I give up. It's just like, come on. What is it? It's like someone wrote a script based on Mad Libs. Put actor here.
I was not obviously as disappointed as you were, but yeah, it was a little bit of a like, oh, really, that's the ending? Okay, I guess.
It wasn't even the ending. It's like, that's the story? Really? Yeah. I don't know. It just had such a great start, and I was so engaged, and then it's like, what? It's like someone promises you, like, you know, a five-course, you know, prime rib dinner, and, you know, and it's like, House of prime rib and stuff, and you get like a little shriveled sizzler steak. Like, what the fuck? Oh, what the heck is this?
Fez is happy now.
Yeah, well, we got Fez.
There you go. All there. For you. That's all for you, Fez.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up Benghazi because the administration has been having a torrent of publicity of late.
And I believe that those torrents are illegal. And the MPAA should send a cease and desist right away.
Or perhaps their buddies at the RIAA.
Or the RIAA. Well, the RIAA doesn't... Ever since they dropped DRM, the RIAA is just kind of like, yeah, me too. They're not leading the charge anymore. The MPAA is, like, on the front lines.
They're the bully, but the RIAA is kind of like the guy, the little guy that comes up behind the bully.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he's going to mess you up.
Yeah, what he said. Yeah. I'm right behind you, MPAA, right here.
5 feet, 10 feet, 100 feet, legally away.
Illegally definable distance, if it comes to that. So, I'll be honest, I haven't been following the Benghazi thing all that much. The IRS thing, I think, is much more condemnable and awful. The Benghazi email thing just strikes me as being blown way out of proportion. Possible incompetence, and that is definitely something to chide and be upset about and say, look, lives were lost. This is not okay. But it's so politicized and so overblown. Whitewater of this particular presidency. And I can't remember the thing that they tried to tack on President Bush, but there's always one. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. They're always trying to tack something on the president these days. But the IRS thing, really, I'm like, that's awful. That should not have happened.
Well, and this is funny. Oh, interesting, because I was listening to...
I'm listening to myself, and it makes it sound like, sure, people died, but the IRS harassed people. And that's not what I mean. I mean that I don't think there was some sort of deep conspiracy in Benghazi.
Conspiracy.
I do think there's a deep conspiracy with the IRS. So politically speaking, I think the IRS thing is worse. Obviously, what happened in Benghazi is much worse.
Well, it's the thing with Benghazi, and this is from a personal point of view, is that it shows a reluctance to take for the administration or someone to take absolute responsibility. It's kind of this weird shuffling of the decks, kind of like playing hot potato. If you were cynical, you could say it was cynically manipulated. I don't think there was a conspiracy, but it was cynically manipulated in the same way that people take advantage of a tragedy to sell life insurance or something like that. It just seems kind of...
I'm not certain it's criminal. What happened with the IRS was criminal.
I think the IRS is a lot more insidious because the IRS is... if you're at least an American, it's pervasive throughout your life. It's like in everything. And the other thing is I think a lot more people would be are outraged about the IRS thing is because everyone has to deal with it. Benghazi, it's something that happened over there. It happened to people, you know, who work for the government. You know, yeah, it's sad someone died, but I'm not directly connected to
well,
it.
Well, and there's a it could have happened to me.
Yes.
Feeling with the IRS, which most people are not embassy workers and therefore probably don't feel like it could happen to them.
But it's pretty shady. And, you know, on top of the whole DOJ AP phone record thing, it's a little it's like a perfect storm of things you can snowball and throw at this administration at this time. It's like literally.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's that second win the opposing team gets. It's like, oh yeah, now we got ammunition. Let's start using it. And it's just like, I don't know. I don't know if it points to a weakness in the administration. I don't know if it points to the weakness in kind of the overall, you know, structure of how the various departments are relating to each other. I mean, if this could happen to someone else, say a non-Democratic or a non-Obama administration, could have happened under, say, a Republican?
Every administration has these sorts of scandals emerge in varying ways, ever since Nixon, frankly.
I think even before
Johnson
Nixon,
had some of this kind of stuff. But Nixon really set the bar, right?
Like, well, Nixon, the thing about Nixon I don't think people appreciate is Nixon's was televised in a way that had been unprecedented. Before, you would get a newsreel, you would get a headline, you would get a radio, but TV, it's in your living room. It's flashing constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, Woodrow Wilson, Warren Gamliel Harding, even U.S. Grant had scandals.
Oh, Ulysses had a lot of...
Right? He was probably more criminal than Nixon. But you're right. It was not televised. And after Nixon was forced to resign, I think that just whet the appetites of the opposing party.
And, you know, it's... I don't know if it's, you know, a little...
And I don't mean Nixon's opposing. I mean, if you're in opposition, you gun for the president.
And you see, it's one of those things that you would wish would go away, but it won't. And I mean, unless you're a diehard supporter, you should be a little concerned about the way some of these, and they are abuses of power. I mean, let's just be flat out. It's an abuse of power by a government against the citizens of this country or select citizens of this country. And it's something that everyone should be concerned about. It should
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I guess the positive element, if there is one, is that we continue to discover them. You know, even though you can vilify the Democrats going after Bush or the Republicans going after Obama, the fact that they're keeping that pressure up may be motivated by selfishness, but it does make sure to expose abuses that happen in a way that keeps them from getting out of hand.
You know, and one of the things, you know, whether or not you consider this a virtue of this society, or at least this country, is that there is, in this day and age, there's very little shame in airing dirty laundry, especially if it benefits you. And so, you know, you do get kind of after a bit of time, not initially, you do kind of get a much, you know, I want a broad view of individuals or administration or various bits of government. Other than something you would have read like maybe 50 or 60 years ago in a newspaper. I mean, there's this almost tawdry kind of tabloidy way that everything's approached that makes it seem unseemly. But, you know, when you think about it, it is unseemly. It is kind of dirty. It is kind of tawdry when you can have, you know, people, whether it be at some sort of office of the IRS and not the IRS officially, you know, doing this kind of thing, or, you know, having the Department of Justice, you know, basically pull without notifying the AP all their phone records to quote unquote track down a potential leak or a possible leak to national security.
Well, and that particularly reminds me of the scandal that Bloomberg is in now for looking at the logins for Morgan Stanley, to find out who is logging in to parts of Bloomberg service that aren't part of the journalistic part of Bloomberg.
You mean the news service, not the mayor?
Correct. Okay. Bloomberg News Service was internally looking at logins of the Bloomberg Financial Service from Morgan Stanley employees to kind of track activity. Also unconscionable, but it has a different flavor because it's not government. You're always going to have people trying to get away with things in any part of life. And that certainly does not excuse them. But I also find it distasteful whenever the accusers act as if this was the first time that these sorts of abuses have ever happened.
You mean when people get very indignant?
Yeah.
How dare you? Everything was sacred and working well before you came along.
Right. It was all pristine under my man.
It's kind of interesting that you bring up the Bloomberg, because there was a thing with who runs all the Fox? What's his name? Murdoch.
News Corp. Right.
News
there
Corp.
was the UK spying, which was much worse than what happened to Bloomberg, I feel like.
And, and you notice what happens. It's not a government thing or a private thing. It's a power thing. People who have these, do have this power, whether it's granted by law or granted by, ungodly amounts of money to do what they want, that there is a sense that people who don't have access to those things are always going to be on the losing end. I mean, that's kind of one of the complaints leveled against Google. Google may be trying to work for the betterment of humanity and mankind, and womankind, and transgendered kind. But people look, it's like you're holding our data, you're doing all sorts of shady things. Your heart might be in the right place, but Lord knows, you're doing some stuff that are freaking people out about privacy, about being able to keep themselves, unlinked to various other, aspects of their digital life online. And it's just, I think it is just kind of, I don't know. I mean, that whole adage about, absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think as you build, this amount of power, it just naturally comes out that way because you can do it.
Well, and I think when you have opportunity and temptation, that's when your mettle is actually tested. A lot of people behave well because they neither can see the gain or have the opportunity to act badly. I kind of think you need to have both, and it's probably more complex than that. But a lot of people would have the opportunity to act badly, but there's just not the temptation. There's the gain isn't worth it, or it's just not something that's important to them. Or vice versa, there may be people who attempted to act badly, but they just don't have the opportunity. They don't have the power, as you're saying, or they don't have the access to do it. But once you have both, that's when it's like, actually, most people will be like, wow, this would be really easy for me to do. Hardly any consequences. I'll just look at the logs, or, I'll just assign people to go after these organizations,
It's
defensible. And that's when questions of ethics actually weigh in.
Yeah, and I'm curious because I don't know if things like that are. I've never had an ethics course until I hit college, and I'm not sure if it was something that was ever included in kind of high school or even junior high or anything like that. Because it's one of those things that people always take for granted. People always know what's the difference between wrong and right.
Sure,
and that's
it's
not
your parents'
the case.
Job to teach you that. It's the church's job to teach you.
Well,
that.
It used to be. Yeah. I mean, my parents at least my mom did, drilled it in my head pretty solid. And then, of course, if you're surrounded by individuals like friends and stuff who also have a similar upbringing, then it's kind of reinforcing. But if you come from a culture where it's like, it's okay, you can take a little money from the till, they won't notice $5, $10, $20, and then, that's where it starts rolling from there. Not that I have any personal experience with that. But like you say, it's just that opportunity and the access. It's like, I can do it and no one will notice. Well, is it bad if I do it? But no one's going to know. I mean, who's going to hurt? It's a victimless crime.
Right, right. That's what I'm talking about. And maybe there's a better word for it than temptation. But what I'm suggesting with that is the temptation is great, right? Like either, no one will ever know, right? Or it's like, it's worth the risk of getting caught because there's such a great reward at the end of doing it. But that temptation leads you one way or another. And then opportunity is the other thing. Is like, well, I can, right? I have the power. I have the ability to do it.
And, honestly, if you take it from an evolutionary aspect, that's kind of what drives a species forward. It's that, that particular animal that says, I think I can snake away that kill from a pride alliance and be okay.
Yeah.
Let's take it. And so it's, No, like,
because what you're
like,
describing is that it's the same impulse, but it's not always bad, right? It's not always an ethical violation to be like, hey, I wonder if I could eat the fruit on that tree. I'm going to give it a shot. I have the temptation because I would eat, be fed, and I have the opportunity. But it's not a bad thing. I guess maybe the tree would disagree.
But I think that's the impulse. That's a biological drive.
Getting reproduction out of it, so the tree's fine with it, too.
It's like any sort of addiction, like gambling or alcohol or something. It's, you know, if it's a trait that doesn't work out, well, typically you would have been picked off by, you know, a large predator or perhaps a, you know, giant-sized eagle, you know, for making a mistake and your genes don't get passed on.
Right. I mean, addictions usually are center around the reward center being stimulated or being, in a lot of cases, things I've read recently, they're inaccurately stimulated. In other words, a lot of research on things like heroin addiction is like you no longer feel the pleasurable effects, but you get the reward reaction anyway.
Yes.
And so that's when people say, well, I don't even feel it anymore, but I can't stop. The compulsion. And the reward center being activated is also what drives you to do great things, right?
Exactly. And well, it's so interesting because what I've heard from emergency workers is they get a rush mm-hmm. when they rush into that fire to pull that person. And in many ways that is their compulsion. They're addicted to that kind of feeling. When someone does it, you know, not synthetically, but they do it with a drug or shooting up or something that, it's considered negative, right? And I think possibly because there's a cost-benefit analysis. Like, one, you're benefiting the community, so it's okay. If, like, shooting up heroin made you super intelligent and made you like a human, like, made you like
made
a
you
Vulcan,
save lives.
Yeah, like, you could out-calculate, you know, Deep Blue or whatever the IBM supercomputer, and you're like super intelligent. People say, yeah, you know, not so bad. It's kind of like you know, caffeine. You just
right, right. Because caffeine has addiction, and it has side effects, but the side effects are not so bad that the positives are not outweighed. Now, certain religions do ban caffeine because of the downside of it, but most societies find caffeine and coffee to be perfectly acceptable.
Or tea or various.
But you also don't have nearly the negative side effects. I mean, the thing about heroin, would you say the same thing about heroin if it's like, oh, taking heroin could make you do things like cure cancer and save lives and be amazing, but it still has all the same downsides it has now. It still has the horrible addiction, and it will eventually erode your ability to function as a human being and possibly die.
I mean, is it that kind of the argument pro-pot supporters kind of like, you know, pot has, you know, all these wonderful medicinal values. It helps people who have are suffering from long-term illness to kind of alleviate the pain. Helps people eat who might have, is it HIV that eats, makes you not want to eat when you take the medication. I mean, there are all these things, and they're saying like, you know, it's and all these beneficial uses, but you know, it does have a detrimental effect. I mean, studies have shown that moderate, and I don't know what they consider moderate to heavy use in adolescence will actually slow down. I mean, it does impair.
Well, and so does alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
So.
But one's legal and one's not.
Right. That would be an interesting, and I'd be really surprised if someone hasn't written the story and I'm just not aware of it. The alternate history where alcohol has suffered the fate of marijuana and became the outlawed drug, where marijuana was tolerated and maybe had a brief prohibition, but that was overturned and became perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, it's really kind of wonky how a lot of those things work out. And you know, personally, you know, my personal view on it is prohibition on drugs doesn't work. And, you know, I don't think the law enforcement aspect that we currently have tracking down is the best use of money. I do believe that areas with severe drug addiction tend to experience more vagrancy, more crime, and a lot of other things. But like, you know, it's a very interesting kind of view on how a society operates when certain things are allowed, other things aren't, even though they're very similar in what they are and how they're used.
I've come to the opinion that the effects of drugs and what kind of controls should be put upon them and what kind of punishments in place for using them is an epidemiological issue. That, you know, given, and you may dispute that this could be even possible, I know some people do, but given that you would have trustworthy scientists who could evaluate the issue, it's solvable. We can have the tools now to determine sociologically and social psychology, using social psychology, what is probably the best way to handle these things and what the effects are, you know, and what the benefits are and the risks are, because all of these things are true. Sure. People who deal in pot often lead other criminal lives. And so, you know, putting somebody in jail for pot may take them off the street for doing other crimes. But the other side of the argument is that a symptom of the fact that pot is already illegal, or is it a cause, et cetera, et cetera? These are all solvable problems. I don't think it should be a matter of opinion. Like, I think this is probably true. We can discover it if we really want. And in fact, there may even be somebody in the audience, but there's definitely people out there that are like, actually, I do study this, and I could give you an educated opinion. Unfortunately, that's not the way our democracy works. We don't go to the experts anymore because we have sown distrust. Who are the experts? Are they paid by a corporation? Well, are they under the influence of a certain political ideology, et cetera, et cetera?
And there's always, you know, and there's always questions with the methodology. There's always someone raising their hands like, well, that doesn't seem kosher.
Right, but that's science. Yeah. Science works.
Well, yeah.
And science has a procedure for dealing with those kinds of issues. So
it does, but human interpretation of empirical data will always be subjective.
That's true, but that's why we have a scientific method.
I firmly have faith in the scientific method. I am not so sure about scientists, in so much that they are people and they may or may not have an agenda, and because they interact in a wider society filled with other people.
Yeah, but all I'm saying, Roger, is that the same way we can determine subatomic physics, we can determine what is likely true about the way societies work.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. It's like you could say certain things about pot. Yes, studies have shown that moderate to heavy use does impair brain functions. In around 7% of individuals, it causes psychological issues, usually kind of manifesting in paranoia. And so there are different aspects. And the thing I think what you're getting at, and I agree with you, is that there is a way to test all these things. But I think the biggest obstacle is that people really don't want to hear it because they stick their fingers in their ears and go, nah, 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 I'm right, you're wrong.
Right. And then they start throwing dung, like, I found another scientist who disagrees with you. And then even though that's not the way science works, all of a sudden in the court of public opinion, it becomes, we have to tell both sides of the story, and you don't get anywhere.
Yeah. And so, and you know, it's you know, the thing with the way we study is that what I find is that we tend to look like a large problem of unemployment. Say like, you know, like in the central law, when you look at like unemployment unemployment levels over a year, you see this dip. It's like, oh, what's happening? And so you kind of focus in on various aspects. Well, is it education? Are these people just not have the skill set? You know, completely ignoring the fact that, you know, the Central Valley, most of it's agriculture and seasonal, right? People are hired when the tomatoes come in to work at the canneries, and the drivers have to drive. Well, all you're looking at all these different aspects, and I think it's very easy to kind of get deluded to lose the forest for the trees, where you just kind of you're looking at one tree, but you're missing the entire forest.
A properly functioning academia will keep those sorts of errors to a minimum. Not to say that they'll ever eliminate them, but peer review will point these things out. That's what academics do. They take pot shots at each other's research to make sure that the research is as bulletproof as possible. I think part of the problem, actually, that you veered toward right there is that in the social sciences, we don't have as rigorous of an approach, and we have a lot, because of that, because that's a younger science. We have a lot of influence and pressure trying to nudge researchers in one direction or another in a way that you don't in subatomic physics. You don't have as many people saying, you know, it'd really be great if there were a fourth quark. I'm just saying.
If you were blunt about it and you did an IQ test and certain groups came out disadvantaged over others and you noticed there is either an ethnic, racial, or socioeconomic kind of correlation between those, you know, you wouldn't flat out say like, oh, all Chinese people are dumb as bricks and they can't add 1 + 1 = 2.
Sure. No, you wouldn't.
Even if the test scores prove that.
But you said all. I've seen studies that say African-American IQs tend to be lower because of X, Y, and Z. And then people start to tear, you know, like, well, wait a minute. Did you control for socioeconomic class? Did you control for this? That's what's supposed to happen.
Yes. But I think part of it is like, you know, you're not giving this oftentimes, you know, it's nice to think of academia as kind of walled off and not under the influence of what public opinion is. But
I think
people who write this, I mean, they're very conscientious about how things are phrased.
Conscientious about their grant money is what they're conscientious about.
So, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting. Like one of the things that, you know, came up recently is that, you know, all the violence and antisocial behavior there's a strong correlation between that and the amount of lead in the environment, you know,
flying bullets, Roger.
They were specifically talking about leaded gasoline.
Oh, really? I was thinking leaded paint, but you're talking, yeah, okay.
Leaded gasoline. And uh-huh. It was actually a British site. I think was it The Economist or maybe it was just the BBC? Showing like there was no conclusive aha, but there was a strong correlation between that and the use of leaded gasoline in the country, and slowly how it was phased into unleaded, that trend started to go down. And you know, one of the arguments was that, you know, a lot of these people were being poisoned by lead, you know, in a very minute particulate form in the atmosphere, as these cars were being run and industries were being run and all this stuff.
How do you test that hypothesis, though? Because that could be correlative, right?
Yeah. Well, it's all correlative.
It could just be correlative. It might not be causative.
Exactly. So, like, what do you? I mean, it's interesting. How would you test? Would you get a bunch of kids together, just give some lead and not.
Well, your experimental test is going to be difficult. But I wonder if there's other data that you could tease out. To try to say like the only differences between these two areas was the lead content over a period of time. I mean, it's possible. That's a hard one. That's a doctoral thesis waiting to happen.
Someone might get and win a Nobel Prize. So I think.
About prizes, huh?
It is
a big awards show.
It is sometimes. I think
it's stimulating that reward center. We're back to that.
If you think about it, like how people put that in there, I'm a Nobel Prize winner. It's like, okay.
Nobody I know does that, but yeah, you're right.
Well, no, I mean, like when they refer to someone.
Well, yes. Any kind, even much lesser awards, you know, award winning actress, Kim Kardashian.
Burger King Award winner of the year. I don't know. Ate the most fries.
Yeah, I suck at that game, and I know it works. I know you should play it that way, because even though everyone knows that it's possible, I'm not talking about the Nobel Prize now. I'm talking about the sort of Burger King Prize winner. Even though they know it's like, oh well, anybody could say that. It works. It makes people like say, oh well, he won an award.
I mean, granted, it was a Burger King, but I didn't win a Burger King award.
I know. I should be collecting all my awards because I've won awards. They're silly.
I mean, I had my trophy.
It wasn't a Nobel.
Actually, someone stole my medal for academic decathlon, but that's like, eh.
I have my math counts trophy right over here, a second place in the open competition.
I have my diplomas, and they're all stuffed in a box somewhere. Like, it, I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I understand the beneficial use, or at least for one's career, to have those prominently displayed. But I don't know, unless it's something like the Nobel Prize, although not one for economics, because that is not a true Nobel Prize, it's just related.
It's noble-ish.
There was some controversy a while back about the whole Nobel Prize for Economics, because it's actually not awarded by the Nobel Foundation. It's an associated one, and they used to call it like the Economics Nobel Prize or a prize associated with whatever Nobel.
But, is it like the Rolex with two X's? Like it's a knockoff Nobel? Has two L's at the end?
It's not a knockoff, but at some point the Nobel Foundation.
N O space B E L.
Don't make fun of me.
No, I'm making fun of the Nobel adjuncts.
I'm gonna try to wiki it real quick.
Oh but, yeah, wiki it up.
Nobel Memorial Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences.
Okay, but it's not from the Nobel Prize Foundation. No,
it's from the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, and at some point there was.
And the Royal Swedish Academy is behind the Nobel Prize, right?
Among them, Swedish. Let me see. Some critics argue that the prestige of the prize in economics derives in part from its association with the Nobel Prizes, an associate that has often been at a source of controversy. Among them, blah blah blah. I guess at some point there was a schism between the two, but now they just accept it.
So it's two prizes named after Nobel.
Yeah, but one is actually the one Nobel set up.
Right, the economics one was done later.
Yes,
and so it's a branding issue.
Yes,
the trademark lawsuit.
It's like, you know, it's you won the Academy Award or related, you know, statue to acting.
Actually, I am an Academy Award winner because one of my shows won award from the Academy of Web Television.
Exactly.
Right? It's kind of like that. It's like, wait a minute, which academy? Oh, not the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
So, I mean, it's that's the thing, though, and this is why I was mentioning I have a strong belief and conviction in the scientific method, but sometimes scientists I see and I they're motivated by all the same emotions.
Oh yeah. That's why you need the scientific method.
I believe that's why you need peer review. I believe
exactly,
and not just rigorous peer review because it's, you know, one of the things that always bothered me, and I understand the reason behind this, but like, for example, to get your PhD, you have to go in front of a judgment of your peers. But sometimes that just sounds like, you know, you're going to be judged by people who know you really well. They might like you.
Right.
So they might give you a break or something.
But that's not the way it usually works out. Believe me.
After your many attempts to get a PhD.
After my many attempts to order a PhD from the back of the Weekly World News. I know this very well. No. After knowing enough doctoral students and hearing their stories about how it went, it's generally not a fun, friendly situation. Well, that ends up our East Meets West episode 311. Are you satisfied, Roger? Do you feel good about it? Do you feel ethics-y and noble-ish?
I feel hungry.
All right. I could eat. Yeah. We're gonna go... eat. Oh, if we talk about food, do we infringe the trademark of the Food Channel's East Meets West? I don't know. That's a story for another day.
No. I think... Oh, whatever.
So brilliant.com/EMW. We'll see you later, folks.
Bye.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.